Today's program is brought to you by Byright, a family-owned San Francisco-grown market. For more information, visit buyrightmarket.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here with the one-woman show that turned back pocket pasta, the hashtag, into a cultural phenomenon, really.
Thank you.
Kalu Henry, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's kind of funny. This is the flip side of the coin for you. Someone who dealt so long in PR and marketing gets to market herself.
Yeah, it's been a trip in a great way.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun.
From crazy social media vehicles like Instagram, you started this little project, Back Pocket Pasta, out of your own cupboards, pantries. What was it? A drunken night at home, a late night snack, just a way to satiate yourself and feed you and your husband?
Pasta is my favorite food. Always has been. I think probably always will be. Asian is a close second. But, that's just... I was coming home working really long hours and wanted to put a bowl of noodles in front of my face and didn't really want to have to go out and start shopping. And usually my pantry is pretty well stocked and my fridge is relatively, filled with seasonal ingredients. And I was able to start sort of pulling these dishes together really quickly. And it was really satisfying and a lot of fun. And I started taking pictures of them because I'm a big Instagram person. Love it. My husband thinks I love it too much, but it's okay. I try to curb my enthusiasm. And I started hashtagging it on Instagram, and it kind of just took off.
You know, the hashtag, it in of itself is a cultural phenomenon. And the way that it can generate and exponentially grow, this has always been ingrained in you.
Yep.
Let's talk about you being a native New Yorker and your Italian heritage. This is the way that you cooked, your parents cooked, your noni cooked.
Yes. So, I was born actually in Greenwich Village in the late 70s and was raised in the suburbs in Rockland County. And my grandmother actually lived with us growing up, which is very old school, I think. To a lot of people, I think in the American Italian community, it's probably pretty normal, but I didn't know anything else. So, we grew up, having Sunday sauce every Sunday and, having her tuna clam sauce, not sure why she added the tuna to the clams, but it worked. and eating marinara, a couple times a week. And it was sort of these ingredients that were cheap to get, and a lot of the fish was out of cans, and I think that she learned that from her parents. They came over from Italy in the late 1800s and spoke no English and had a lot of children and no money. So I think a lot of these recipes were sort of based out of need to feed a lot of mouths and doing it on the cheap.
So I mean, you had this your whole life. Your grandmother lived to be 102.
Yes.
So this wasn't just like, oh, I remember as a little kid doing this.
Right.
I mean, this was every Sunday. This was more than tradition.
Yep, absolutely.
This was passed on through generations.
It definitely was. And it was really interesting because I think my great-grandmother's name is Kalu, or was nicknamed Kalu as well. My given name is Maria Nicola. She was also named Maria Nicola. And affectionately, my great-grandfather nicknamed her Nicolucha, and somehow it got shortened to Kalu, and I'm Kalu. I think that all of this just kind of, sorry, will you repeat that? I totally forgot where we were going.
No, I mean, keep on going and talk affectionately about your noni, because I mean, that's where this you know, foreign idea of a hashtag. You know, it transported generations and years.
So they spoke no English, and you know, essentially I think that my grandmother learned to cook by watching her, and that was the same thing that my mother and her brothers did too. You know, she never really wrote anything down, and my uncle would start sort of, you know, following her around the kitchen and watching her put these dishes together, like puttanesca and pasta fagioli and all these things, which are all based out of pretty much a can of tomatoes, some garlic, olive oil, and onion, and was able to sort of capture what she was doing. So it was a really nice, you know, thing to grow up around. You know, it was sort of, everything was based around the kitchen. People wanted to be around the stove. You know, we, you know, do Feast of the Seven Fishes, you know, every Christmas. So it was just sort of this instilled in me from a very young age that, you know, the kitchen was the place you wanted to be, and you could pull something together really beautifully and, you know, for not a lot of money.
I mean, tell me about the aroma of waking up to meatballs with pecorino.
I'm going
to
tell you something. It was the goddamn best. You'd like kind of like be sleeping. You'd be sleeping. You'd open your eyes. You'd take a whiff and you'd be like, yeah, it's Sunday. That's
so
happening.
So much better than waking so up to coffee.
Yeah, so much better. And I literally would run downstairs and wait. My mom would dish, you know, my mom would dish me the meatball and have sauce. And then we'd have pecorino and, you know, some bread around the house, and that was it. I mean, that was breakfast, and I had no problem with that.
Wait, that was breakfast, the meatballs.
Oh, yeah.
And bracciole.
Oh, yeah.
That was breakfast as well.
Sometimes, special occasions, yeah. My mom actually made bracciole for the first time in a long time this past Christmas Day, and it was the best. I love that shit. It's so good, yeah.
And you just sop it up, and I know you're a big fan of Arthur Avenue.
Yes.
And those sesame semolina breads.
Yeah,
you need
it.
Something on the side, but we're talking about like specialty items in a sense, you know, waking up and having these meatballs. What if you wake up and don't have anything in the house? Like, you must have staple pantry ingredients.
Absolutely.
To kind of build this idea out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would have, in my own pantry, you'd always have garlic. You always have some sort of citrus. You always have olive oil and breadcrumbs. I mean, those are kind of always around. Usually, there's not a lot of meat laying around, but
because you're eating that for breakfast.
Yeah, because that's happening at breakfast. But greens, you know, tinned fish, all that kind of stuff.
You know, I'm a big fan of having a pantry that's both accessible but interchangeable. You know, and I remember in college how I used to cook.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, with that kind of stocked larder, but I didn't really have that much variety or breadth of knowledge to be able to, you know, make something outside of pasta and red sauce.
Sure.
How did you explore that? I know you worked in restaurants in Boston and New York. Was it with that culinary education that you can go outside of the, you know, Sunday pastas?
I think a bit. I mean, I think that a lot of what I learned in restaurants was eating sort of outside Italian food, to be honest, because it was something, you know, we ate a lot of at home. I mean, not to say my mom doesn't make a mean roast chicken. She does, and amazing chicken cutlets, again, sort of Italian. But I think working in restaurants sort of really woke me up to this passion that I had about food. So I knew that I loved food. I knew I loved being around food. I knew that it was very important to my family. It's all anybody talks about. But working in restaurants, I think I started when I was 17. I was a young college freshman, really sort of opened my eyes in terms of other kind of food, to be honest. And I think, yeah, in a lot of ways, I think that sort of plays into being able to play around with ingredients and being exposed to different things and all that stuff.
Well, I know you worked at Sonsi on Newberry Street. And what I'm not going to say hated, but
I know it was the worst.
Or despised.
It was terrible.
Or, you know, shunned from that establishment was the ilk of people that were there.
Oh, they're awful.
It wasn't because they were the worst or I want to avoid them at every cost. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're really feeding someone just an elevated idea of something very simple.
Yes.
And I think that's what you're doing here, too, without the facade of Sonsi.
Absolutely. I mean, I want these recipes to be approachable for people, but I also want them to feel aspirational at the same time. You know, I mean, there's something to be said for grating zest on top of, you know, orange zest or blood orange zest or whatever the case may be, and just sort of elevating it a bit to your point.
Another place that you worked at in Boston, which I adore.
Yes.
The Good Life.
Oh.
Because what that was able to do is take something comforting and add this performative aspect.
Yes.
And having gone to Emerson and, you know, trying to write a one-woman show, you liked being at that forefront.
I loved it. And that was the time. I mean, both restaurants were so amazing and special in a different way. I worked at Sansi first, and had never worked in a restaurant before, and, you know, was working as a barista, as the coffee girl, but it was behind this big ginormous bar, and they would literally feed me like pint glasses of gimlets. And I learned a lot, but then I went away to, I spent the semester in the Netherlands, and I came back and they were just opening the Good Life. And it was this kind of first of its kind martini sort of jazz, you know, bar, bringing back sort of the Frank Sinatra era. And, I was taught how to bartend, which was awesome, dangerous, but awesome. But they also let me sing there a couple times, which was really a lot of fun.
My wife and I were joking around because you had sent me some information mm-hmm. about Back Pocket Pasta mm-hmm. and it had the word chanteuse. And I'm like,
yeah,
does she mean chartreuse? Like, no. I didn't know. And Megan obviously yes, knew and said, oh no, ask her to sing something, which I may for second half of this show. But again, that performative yeah. nature mm-hmm. also instills itself in your cooking.
Yes.
Because I think Instagram is this very funny kind mm-hmm. of, you know, element, because it is performative.
Yep.
It's detached in a way, but it really is putting yourself out there. And I mean, you got to have balls to do that.
Yeah. It's funny. I try to be conversational. I mean, it is social media, right? So you want to be conversational, but you also want to respond to people. You know, I think through this hashtag, the enthusiasm for it has been really overwhelming and exciting. You know, people want to create their own Back Pocket Pastas, and it's really fun to sort of just exchange with them on Instagram about, you know, even if I don't follow them necessarily, like I'll go through and check the hashtag just to see sort of what people are doing. And I always am enthusiastic and appreciative and, you know, always give them a like and just, you know, I'm happy to see that it's being used.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That interaction is, again, something that you used to do for, you know, such chefs as Marcus mm-hmm. Samuelson, Kurt Gudenbrenner, mm-hmm. Scott Conant.
Yeah.
And how have you changed your approach since it's your own personal project?
It's definitely interesting being on this side of the table. It's sort of, you know, honing these skills I worked in, as you mentioned, PR and marketing for almost or over 10 years. Now doing it for yourself is kind of, it's fun, but it's weird, but it's, you've learned all these tools, you've, you know, gotten these skills, and now you kind of have to turn it around and do it for yourself, which is interesting, but it's fun.
Yeah. You know, the buzzword is always trending. What's trending? Mm-hmm. What's hot? What's new? Mm-hmm. How do you keep something trending that, you know, this book is going to come out spring of mm-hmm. 2017?
Yep.
Where's the steam that's going to propel it the whole...
I think a lot of it is going to come from recipe testing, from recipe developing. You know, I have promised 100 pasta recipes. I have about 60 ideas. So I need to come up with a bunch more. I think travel too. I think that that will be really helpful. I'm going to Mexico City on Thursday with our friend Nils, who writes about Mexico City essentially for a living. He also writes about wine. So strange. But so he's going to, like, you know, take us out. We're going to go hard. We're going to go late. But it's going to be fun. You know, I think I was in California last week doing a dinner. I did a Back Pocket Pasta dinner at Scribe, and just kind of getting inspiration from, you know, meeting people and exploring and just, you know, seeing the world.
So, I mean, it's crowdsourced in a sense, but like siphoned through your own perspective.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what are some of the more interesting ingredients or, you know, pasta techniques that you've picked up along the way?
Good question. I mean, pasta techniques, I'm pretty adamant about obviously cooking the pasta like a minute or two short of what they suggest, even if it's like al dente, and then always finishing it in the sauce. I think that I was actually emailing with my editor about this morning. I know a lot of recipes call for a pound of pasta, but I'm more inclined to do less than that. I think 3/4 of a pound kind of makes more sense. And it also gives like the sauce some more coverage, you know, and it's healthier. I mean, obviously this book's not super healthy, but if you want less pasta, more sauce. But then you have the question of what the hell do you do with that last, you know, a quarter of a pound rather. So, I'm trying to figure that piece out.
That's why I remember there are those mixed bags of pasta that you can get on the lower shelves of the supermarket.
I don't know about those.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Well, that's Back Pocket.
That's Stamaki, yeah. You know? You go there and you get those kind of amazing, like you get a gemelli with a star with a...
Oh, that's hard for cooking,
yeah,
though.
Yeah. No, it's terrible for cooking.
Yeah, that's really tough.
But it was like half the price of all the other pastas. But here's how crazy I used to be.
Yeah.
to save that money, I'm like, well, I'll just buy a couple bags and I'll just pick them and separate them. Like,
sort of? Like, you did not.
Oh, yeah. It's like picking out the marshmallows from Lucky Charms.
That is amazing.
It was not worth the time.
That is funny.
But I had these jars of, you know, pastas separated from mixed bags.
That is impressive. What? So you mentioned earlier in an email to me, I'm turning the mic
on
you now.
Do it.
That you had back pocket pasta last night. What was in your back pocket pasta?
Some spinach.
Uh-huh.
We have this big bag of pasta, and we pick it, or at least we did last night, by putting our hand in blindly and picking out whatever.
Fun.
So we had shells, spinach, and pesto.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah. But we'll come back and we'll talk more back pocket pasta after the break. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Today's program is brought to you by Byright, a family-owned San Francisco-grown market. For more information, visit ByrightMarket.com. Byright is a family-owned and San Francisco-grown market that is passionate about creating community through food. From organic farm direct local produce, sustainably raised meats, and artisan cheeses, to food-friendly wines, house-made foods, and dinners, Byright is an essential San Francisco destination for any food lover or cook. And no trip is complete without a visit to the renowned Byright Creamery and Bake Shop for a scoop of salted caramel ice cream. Now celebrating 75 years in the Mission District of San Francisco, visit ByrightMarket.com to learn more. Byright is a proud business member of Heritage Radio Network, supporting good food media from coast to coast.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Your host, Michael Harlan-Turkel, here with Clue Henry.
Hello.
And we are talking back pocket pasta. Yes, the hashtag back pocket pasta, which this is aside, but you can press that hashtag on Twitter and follow the thread, and you can do it on Instagram as well, but you can't do it on Instagram on the internet. You have to be on the app.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
I've gotten really bad about this terrible app called Iconosquare. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I have, and you can search through there.
Yes. But it also shows you who unfollowed you.
Oh, Lord, no. I don't want to know that.
I'm not you personally, but one does not want to know. It becomes its own terrible addiction.
We were just talking about my back pocket pasta of last night, and during the break, I said that I had some secret ingredients. Mm-hmm. And those ingredients are things that I like to have at the house.
Yep.
Just in case if my back pocket pasta night comes up.
Okay.
And lately, I've been loving creme fraiche.
Yum. I was going to bring up labneh, actually. Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a good one, though.
Yeah,
I like
but
creme
instead
fraiche.
Of butter, too.
Why not?
I mean, it's just it's amazing. And it's amazing with a pesto, any oil-based sauce, because it extends that out in a way that it doesn't get so oily.
Oh, that is a great idea.
So
I'm going to try that. I'm going to try that.
Feel free. And because this is what I love, too, about back pocket pasta. Wow, how many times have we said that this episode?
Keep it up.
Yeah, just click that hashtag. Keep on getting those statistics and sabermetrics up. Is that, you know, you get to watch other people do this. Mm-hmm. And what are some of the more fascinating ingredients you've seen incorporated or combinations?
Well, I've seen a lot of people actually, and maybe this is just because everyone wants to be or is going gluten-free right now, but there's a lot of people using gluten-free pasta. I know it's not really an interesting ingredient. There's been some spinach. I know you used spinach last night. I'm trying to think what has sort of stood out to me. A lot of cherry tomatoes with people. Nothing crazy. Nothing like, you know.
You haven't seen Peter venture into, you know, squid ink and uni or some Asian flavors, some Indian
there
flavors.
There was one Asian one. I think Bon Appetit magazine, where I used to work, featured back pocket pasta in the February issue. And I think alongside the sidebar, there was an Asian sort of noodle dish. So someone... I'm not sure if they thought it was back pocket pasta, but they Instagrammed it. And I was like, I'll take it. It's
great. Yeah, bring it on.
Whatever. It's
a much
good.
Bigger umbrella than you ever thought
that's
you
right,
had.
Exactly.
You know, you had mentioned Scribe before in a dinner that you went, you know, did there. I've been on that hillside and at that winery, and it's just majestic and it's
magic.
Gorgeous. And for years you worked at Bon Appetit, and you know, director of public relations and special events. How do you want Back Pocket Pasta to live in the real world? Do you want it to be these dinner parties? Do you want it to be what people do in a pinch?
I want it to be both.
Yeah.
I think ideally, if you can pull together something beautiful with not a lot of fuss and feel good about serving it, it's really about the people that are around the table in addition to what you're serving. And it's about, you know, the conversations and, you know, the wine that's being poured. So I think it's sort of a 360 situation. I mean, yes, I want people to be able and willing and ready to go out and pull together whatever they can. But I think that I wanted to feel, and probably because I was at Bon Appetit for so long, I wanted to feel very food lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you a question.
Yeah.
You don't have to answer because you could say, no, everything I've ever made is delicious.
Yeah.
But what is the worst pasta you've ever made?
Oof.
I know in college when I tried to call from those ingredients.
Actually,
oh, you have it.
It was really, it was bad. It was my fault, obviously, but it was a Sarah Jenkins recipe.
Yeah.
I messed it up.
Yeah.
It was in her first book, and it was a fish, I think, I forget if it was a sole, I forget, or halibut, and lemon, and I just didn't cook the fish right. I effed it up, and I don't know. I should actually revisit it, but I think I just didn't, I didn't cook the fish properly, and it just, I messed up the dish. Not the worst, because it was the worst because I messed it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Not bad on Sarah at all.
No. Well, are you kidding me? Who, love her.
Pasta-wise.
She's amazing.
I got to photograph her and her mother's pasta cookbook coming out this fall. And
so cool.
We had those shells for our Back Pocket Pasta out of that giant bag of pasta that I took home. Again, the word pasta. what I kind of love about it, too, is that, you know, it's such a high-low.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
Aside from, you know, having a dinner party or being able to do it in the pinch, it can be elevated by simple ingredients.
Yes.
What are some of the more expensive or kind of, you know, top shelf things that you like to, you know, have?
Well, I mean, I think definitely seafood. So I have a couple of crab recipe ideas that I'm sort of playing around with. And I definitely would splurge, you know, maybe go to Italy and buy crab that's already been picked and sorted. And I think the seafood always elevates something a little bit. Shrimp too. Also meat. I mean, I don't have a lot of meat driven recipes just by nature of the book. But if I'm going to buy meat, I'm going to buy it, you know, antibiotic free, organic, etc. And there is a really cool place in Hudson actually called Talbot and Arting, and Mona Talbot makes this amazing porchetta, and I turned the porchetta into a meat sauce because we don't have a kitchen right now and I really wanted to make my neighbor's dinner, so I said I want to make a meat sauce, but I don't have time. I'm not going to sit in their kitchen all day and make a proper meat sauce, but I'm going to get all the flavors from this porchetta and turn it into, you know, a faux sort of meat sauce. So it worked. Yeah. It was really good.
Well, I love that you can actually do this without a kitchen.
Oh, I bring it everywhere. I take it on the road.
Yeah.
Friends of mine just had a baby. You know, I got a recipe test, so I took it to them and made dinner there. So it's definitely on the road.
Is it ever an in the blind, like you don't know what's behind someone's pantry? And
I want to do that. My friend Carissa Mondavi, who I was with out in Napa, she, we kind of got drunk, and well, we got drunk a lot, but one night it was her goal to like have me just start going through her cupboards and pantry just to pull something together, but we ended up ordering pizza instead. Yeah.
Well, I only wish that it can be like a clue at the call, and people can actually, you know, some way get in contact with you, and you're willing to come over and cook out of their pantry.
My best friend Jason lives also in the Napa Valley. He lives in Calistoga. He calls me Back Pocket Pasta 911. So he'll call me all the time and be like, "So I have this and I have this. What am I supposed to do? Should I add that?" And I'm like, no, take a step back. So he does have me on sort of speed dial for that. People should feel free.
Yeah. Well, we'll give out your number at the end of the show and everyone can just ring you up.
Great. to take the call.
And also being in the restaurant scene for so long, what are some of the extraordinary pasta dishes you've had here in New York?
I mean, I think when I first started working in restaurant and food PR, Scott Conant, really kind of blew my mind. Like, he was really doing different, you know, sort of taking different approaches. I mean, this is a while back now, but he really inspired me at that period of my life, when he was at Alto and Lempero. I'm trying to think, you know, I mean, obviously Michael White Morea is breathtaking. Sarah Jenkins is amazing. You know, I mean, I think there's, you know, a lot of people do Flour and Water in San Francisco is unbelievable. I just met Thomas for the first time when I was out there by chance, and I got to take a tour of all the different spaces, which was really cool. And he showed me the pasta making room, which was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So I have a photo that I'm like waiting to post because they're like these cool little cap looking things that it was amazing.
See, are you instructing people to make their own pastas?
No.
Or is this no?
Well, my husband actually makes the pasta, to be honest.
Yeah.
I was actually texting him on the way over here, do you want to make tortellini tonight? Because we went to this amazing farm in Ghent this weekend called Made in Ghent, which the last four photos on Instagram have all been about their eggs. They have these incredible eggs. And King Arthur, a friend of mine, sent me some of their pasta flour. So I thought it'd be fun to sort of make some tortellini. I've been wanting to make tortellini. I don't know why. I just been wanting to do it. So I texted him on the way over. I'm like, what do you think about doing this tonight?
Yeah.
And he was like, sure. And I was like, maybe I'll take you up on that then.
See, he's much more accommodating than I am.
Yeah.
Because when my wife asked me,
yeah,
I said, oh, maybe, I don't know. And
yeah,
then we ended up making plein because it was easier.
Yeah.
But it actually was not easier.
No, it's the thing is, I mean, it is made of pantry essentials. So you'd think you could have kind of put it into my pocket pasta. But let's be honest, it's a lot of elbow grease and it takes a lot of time. And actually, I like dried pasta. I think that there's certain dishes that are beautiful with fresh pasta, but I think that, you know, some dishes you shouldn't be
yeah.
with fresh pasta.
And are there brands or types of dried pasta that you prefer?
I mean, I think this book is supposed to be super approachable. So I try to kind of go to the supermarket and look at the shelves. And I use Barilla, I use DiCicco or DiCicco, Ronzoni's fine. You know, I kind of veer away from using anything too gourmet just because I want people to be able to get it at
yeah.
their supermarket. That's sort of the whole, you know,
but
concept.
People are still allowed to kind
of, oh yeah, come on,
bring it up
yeah.
a notch.
Of course, and I encourage that, yes.
So this last part is me gushing towards you and thanking you not only as a back pocket pasta wizard, but also from your time as PR marketing and bringing to us Kyle McLaughlin.
Oh
yeah.
Who's
one of the sweetest guests we've ever had.
Love
one
him
of
so
the most
much.
Surreal mm-hmm. You know, he was lost in a rainstorm 20 blocks
right.
away, and
yeah.
our engineer, Jack, had to pick him up
oh.
in his hoopty.
Right, right, right,
and he
yes.
was holding, what, Jack, was it? A red umbrella?
A red umbrella, yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
He said he had no cell phone.
It.
He said, my cell phone will be dead, just look for me, I'll have a red umbrella.
Oh,
yeah.
That
on
sounds
the corner.
So like him.
Yeah.
I love him so much.
But his sense of hospitality, too, oh. and, you know, pursued by Bear,
mm-hmm.
It's so akin to this project that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not trying to make the food and wine
sure.
pairing happen, but really the sense of, you know, hospitality mm-hmm. really encompasses, you know, what he does.
Absolutely.
And what you do.
He is one of my favorite people in the whole world. We're still very close. We get drunk sometimes and sing musical theater numbers together from Oklahoma, which is really fun. But he is like a really special person and really makes everyone feel comfortable and welcome and at ease. And I think that it's really unusual.
Yeah. What is his back pocket pasta?
He sent me one, actually, because, of course, I sent an email out to get people's, you know, sort of to weigh in. It was a red sauce. I don't remember what it was off the top of my head, but I feel like I should include it because it's Kyle.
Yeah.
But you actually made me think of something, too. There is going to be a wine component to this. Nothing crazy because, again, it's supposed to be approachable. But Talia Bayoki is going to pen that. She's
fantastic.
A really dear friend and has really been at the start of this project from the beginning and, you know, rooting me on and cheerleading. And I'm thrilled that she's going to lend her words to wine.
Well, we are big fans of her and Punch and
yes.
everything that you are doing right now. And
thank
you. Know,
you.
Just a little impatient for spring of 2017.
So I'm like, well, I don't know.
But we will yeah. be participating
Yay.
All along the way, hashtagging our back pocket pasta, as everyone listening should as well. And
fantastic.
Just a big coup to you. Thank you.
Thank
again,
you so much for having me, Michael.
Excellent. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkell. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.